Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. Check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code UNDERMINE for 20% off your order. Farmer-owned, Vermont-grown, Sunset Lake CBD. Hey listeners, I want to tell you about Music Masters Collective, a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. These events give you the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like the Fab Four, Steve Earle, Richard Thompson, John Scofield, Nels Klein, the Milk Carton Kids, and many more. This June, join the Wait Band, featuring members of the band and the Levon Helm Band with special guests, including Jimmy Vivino, Bob Margolin, Lost Leaders, Chris O'Leary, Cindy Cashdollar, Stony Creek Band, Rob Fraboni, Larry Packer, and so many more at Camp Cripple Creek. This all-inclusive music vacation in the Catskill Mountains of upstate New York promises to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience featuring performances, workshops, jams, comfortable lodging, and superb dining. Visit campcripplecreek.com/undermine to register today. That's campcripplecreek.com/undermine.
Osiris.
Here we are. It's episode 22, and I'm Tom Marshall. Welcome back. I don't have a co-host today, so my guest is visible to all of you in YouTube land, and I'm going to keep him quiet until I introduce him, but he's there. And thanks for coming. So we've landed in March 97, but if you look around at where we landed, we're suddenly strangers in strange lands, because last episode we did was Amsterdam. The next one we're doing is Amsterdam. Today it's Germany. But let's get into it. But first, you've been enjoying this season of Undermine. If you've been enjoying it, please subscribe to Osiris Premium on Apple, where you get ad-free podcasts, bonus episodes, and more. And I prefer it when I can have a co-host tell you about these things. But today, I'm going it alone. Well, not really alone. As I said, I've got an old friend with me, friend of the pods. Today, he's our guest, a return appearance. And I'm talking, of course, about Brad Sands, who is Fish's road manager during this entire Fish era that we've devoted this season to. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Thanks for coming back, man.
If you ever need a co-host, I'm available.
I know. I think you've sort of just dropped into the co-host slot.
I'd be better than Benji. I can say that with confidence.
Those other guys should be worried.
Yeah.
I mean, you dropped in a road manager slot. Like one guy took a break and suddenly he came back and you had his job.
Heisman him right out of there.
So it's happened before. There's precedent. So anyway, RJ and Benji, watch your back.
You know, I think my favorite thing about doing these is the fact that I'm like, you know, I go back and revisit these shows in a certain sense. And this one was, I remember this one vividly. It was a great show. Good times. The tour itself was like all those kind of Europe tours, except for the one in 98 when we did like Barcelona and Prague and Copenhagen, the rest of them all kind of blend together,
right?
You know, and you have to go, oh yeah, like Dublin was in June, not in February. And, you know, so
I came over for, that was the 98 one. I came over specifically just for Prague and Barcelona, but I had done the Prague before in 97.
Which I believe is where Trey, that Prague in 97 is where he got the D-set Packnet shirt. That was from Prague. That was like the venue was selling them or something. And they just gave us a bunch of them. It was like, oh, these are cool.
But so anyway, the last time you were here, we were in New Hampshire and now we're in Germany. That was 93. Okay. This is 97. We finally arrived. This is kind of the destination, although fall 97 is the destination that our podcast has been headed for. Right. But this is important. This show is really important for kind of a lot of reasons. But I, like you alluded to, I was not here for this tour. But whenever I went over to Europe, and I think it was three times, you and I, well, you know, you weren't on stage. So when you could, we had fun together. And it was amazing. And I'll never forget, especially I think a great tour was later this summer where we did Dublin, London, Austria, and Prague.
Yeah, I mean, I remember because the Dublin show, I think, was right after Bradstock, if I'm correct, right? And the thing I remember the most about Dublin was, I feel like when we got there, we were like, we were making all these U2 jokes in like the clubs and like they're playing this horrible music. And we'd always go to these clubs in Europe and be like, this is great. It's so fun. And it's like this really bad, like house music, you know? Like,
Trey always made fun of that, that Sunday, bloody Sunday, the second harmony, like, Sunday, bloody Sunday. Yeah. He would do it over and over again, ad nauseum.
I remember telling Mike that they should play New Year's Day at Big Cypress and that it never really got anywhere. Great baseline, you know?
Do you remember, speaking of Dublin, we've already gotten off base, but that's fine. Do you remember a passport snafu or a mini snafu? You'd already been in Europe with the band twice, if I'm counting right. So this was the third time. I remember you said,
actually, because we did the Violent Femmes tour that
Okay. And so I remember just getting there on the bus and I was like, you know, organized. I had all my stuff and you went around and you were collecting passports because I think we were all going to be asleep on the bus as the bus took a ferry from Dublin to the England mainland.
London.
And you said it's very characteristic. You said something to the effect of watch this. Paige will have his passport ready and then the other three won't be able to find it. And sure enough, those guys.
Just plays out like constantly the whole time, you know, like Paige always was, you know, like you never really had to worry about Paige, like having it together, you know, no matter what. And Trey, for the most part, but you know, like you're not going to find Paige going over the border with like something left in his toiletry kit, like some of the other guys, you know what I mean?
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. So back to this particular tour. So this is winter, early 97 and Fish's first solo headlining European tour. So what are the challenges of touring abroad apart from...
It's funny because like the first time we went to Europe was 19, I think it was the summer of 92 and we opened for the Violent Femmes, right?
Incredible.
And it was one of those like, I mean, hey, they were awesome. They were a great live band, kind of, you know, a really cool thing to be associated with, but their crowd was not into Fish. I mean, that's like the opening slots. Like the Santana crowd was a little bit better of a match, but you know, not always. And so it was totally different because even back then it was like you had all the other, it wasn't open borders. So each place going was like a board, you know, like a border check and all that. So, you know, and the buses aren't as nice and the, you know, it's just the drivers are weird. And, you know, we had this one bus driver who we figured out at like, you know, they could like typically in an American bus, you know, you put your luggage underneath the bus. In Europe, they're the underneath compartments, like the bus driver sleeps underneath the bus, basically, you know, and then he has like the bay. And then we're always scrambling to, they have these double decker buses, and you're always scrambling to put your bag somewhere. And we had this driver, I think it was on that summer tour, this winter tour we're talking about, but he was like stealing bikes as we were like going along. And like, I opened the bay once and there was like literally like 10 bikes in there, like a homeless guy, you know? So then at the end of the tour, like we took them out, like we like basically stole them back from him and just returned them to, you know, wherever. I think he was pissed.
Wow.
But it was always just that part of it was always kind of strange, you know? And then the power is different. So inevitably, like, pedals don't work, and, you know, it's a challenge, and especially at that level, because at clubs, it's not like, you know, you're doing an arena or a stadium tour. It's where everything's sort of taken care of, you know?
Right.
You're kind of encountering these challenges daily. Plus, you know, the first time we went to Europe, we were driving, we drove a van, you know, and you're like, you're in London, you're driving on the wrong side of the road, you know?
I kept encountering, cause I, you know, I'm not a very skilled European traveler. So all this stuff was new to me. And one of the weirdest things that happened that I couldn't conceive of how Santana in a touring capacity wouldn't know this, or his roadies. I could see how, like, Fish wouldn't know it, but we got to a place where we were, I think, playing in Italy. Again, this is the wrong tour, right. But it was a town square, and the cars, the trucks wouldn't fit. You guys had to hoof in a ton, and literally tons of equipment.
Well, in general, Italy is just, you know, like, great food, not the most together place to do a show. You know, like, I mean, it's always kind of like that. But, you know, I remember, you know, Italy in particular always had these, like, kind of, they would always do these gigs in these cool places like that. You know, they didn't really have a lot of traditional venues because it's like the old country, literally. And it was always like that. It was like you just had to adapt, you know.
But I remember Fish was entering sort of a different phase where they were getting a little bit popular, and they were getting they're getting some money, and they were starting to dress nicer. Like, I think they came back from Europe with Versace suits once. But
like silky Versace underwear. You thought they were so great. It was like so happy about them. It's like, they're so comfy.
But I think it's kind of funny because I didn't remember them really liking to indulge after a show in going out, especially clubs. And yet in Europe, it seemed like the promoters would take Fish and all the entourage.
And I think in Europe, it always felt like, I mean, you were meeting all these new different people. It wasn't the same, you know, people you've been meeting. And in America, it was different. I mean, you know, we liked it. We knew where we wanted to go. We had no idea in Europe. So we let someone take us, you know, like, and I think it was just more of like, it felt like those tours always felt like you were on like a camp adventure or something when you were little, right? Like, you go away and you're with your, like, 15 best friends, and you just kind of get into, like, shenanigans, you know?
Yes,
and
totally.
It's sort of like, you know, obviously not, like, totally like Fish and Trey's trip to Europe, you know, back in the 80s, which, you know, a lot of this stuff was born out of, but kind of along those lines, you know?
Were you one of the worm riders?
I definitely probably rode on the back of the worm at least once or twice. But I remember even, like, Paige and I used to have the best times in these European cities. Like, we'd go for these long walks, and he was working on the second disc, and we would, like, sit down with and listen to these, like, mixes really loud on this tape deck, like, sitting on, like, a square, like, you know, it was cool. It was just kind of like things you wouldn't do in Denver. You know what I mean? Like,
well, it's also surrounded by, you know, 1500-year-old buildings and churches. Yeah. And and sometimes, like,
I feel like, Tom, Mark, remember the time you guys bet me on, we did, like, the water drinking contest that was, like, in Europe?
Oh, yeah. What was that about?
Instead of drinking beer, we decided to have a water drinking contest. You know, and then that culminated with me eating a playing card for like $1,000 or something.
I remember the band was betting, and they bet with, like, $100 bills. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, like, really stupid bets, you know, like, you know, and I was, like, surprised at how hard it was to eat a playing card.
I was actually pretty sure that I could drink maybe it was 2 gallons in one sitting or something, but it didn't work. It did not work.
But fun. Anyway.
Fun. And you're right. So that's kind of like the environment we're in, sort of mischievous. You're with your friends. It's kind of a camping trip. It's fun because you're not with the standard crowd. You're kind of like, away from home, you know, and it's just.
And you're also like, you're going to these places that, like, at least, like, if to skip ahead to Hamburg, right? Like, you know, like, when you get there, the first thing you go is, like, you try and find the Beatles place, you know, which is this, like, the Kaiserkeller, which was this club where the Beatles played in, like, 1960, you know, like, You know, and I remember we used to like joke that like Hamburg was like the Beatles version of Telluride, you know, like I left London and went to Hamburg, whereas like Fish left Vermont and went to Telluride, you know, like,
and, that's perfect.
You know, there's no photo of John and Paul carrying a keyboard across the street, but you know, and you're also like, you run into like, when you're in Amsterdam or in, particularly in Hamburg, they have like these, you know, the red light district, this like thing, they call it the Reeperbahn in Hamburg. And you're walking up and down there and it's just like girls in the window, you know, and you're just like, this is crazy. This is insane. That the, you know, that would never exist in America, you know.
Briefly, 42nd like, Street was like that, but not completely like that.
This. It's a whole nother level, you know. Yeah. You know, so there's just a sense of trouble and danger around that, especially in Hamburg, you know.
True.
One of the things that was really funny on this tour.
Yeah.
Was after we played London, we went to Cologne, Germany. You know, Cologne has this big, fancy old church, and it's like the hotel's across this bridge to Marriott, like right across the river. And we got there and we checked in at night, you know, and we woke up, we went for a walk, and we came back and there were all these, like our buses pulled in. That's what we got there in the morning. The buses pulled in, and all, there were like thousands of girls there, right? Like young. And we were like, man, this is crazy, you know, like we're like totally thinking it was for like the Fish, for Fish, you guys, know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get out there like, who are they looking at us like we're like, you know, like, oh, you know, found out like it was the Backstreet Boys were actually touring. they were actually like popular in Germany before. This is before they became big in America, 1997. They were playing in Cologne the same night we were. And like, I mean, the hotel was crazy. And we're like, who the fuck are the Backstreet Boys? Yeah. I never heard of that. You know? And then like a year later, you're like, oh my God. Anyway, so.
That's awesome.
Those are the things that happen in Europe, you know?
Yeah, and yeah, exactly.
I think before we got, because we did like, we did a bunch of German shows and then we went back into like Italy. And then we ended up back in Hamburg sort of towards the end of the tour. I don't think it was the last show, but it felt kind of like near the end, right?
Well, yeah. Well, the reason this one's pivotal and it's kind of like where Cow Funk started in a way. So like fall of 96, they covered Talking Heads. And then here, just a few months later, it's almost like they went all the way to Europe to experiment with what would eventually be called Cow Funk.
And can I go on record and say that is the dumbest name ever for
until today, I don't think I've used that more than five times in my life, but I think it's like a reference.
I know what you mean though. Yeah.
I mean, Trey would describe it as the band got into grooves more, but people labeled it Cow Funk. And I think the cow is from Vermont, right? That's the only way that I can, anyway, the band has talked about how it was a breakthrough and they even, you know, did you feel, were you aware at the time as a pivot point or did you see it at a crossroads?
I think like when you like after the Halloween albums always sort of dictated kind of style and stuff. And cause they would practice those for so long, you know, and obviously the Talking Heads record is a very groove oriented record, you know? And I think that they just wanted to lean into that direction after playing it. And they were good at it too. You know, it was great to see Trey like play more rhythm guitar, you know, and be patient. There was a lot more patience in Europe because they were really enable like the gigs almost to a certain degree, like didn't matter, you know, like in a sense of like, we would go to Europe. We weren't, you know, that we were trying to break Europe and all of us knew like, this is never going to happen, you know, like there's just no way, you know, but it's fun, you know? And, yeah, it was definitely, you could feel the band changing. I mean, even Billy Breeze was, I think they were like supporting Billy Breeze at this point because Billy Breeze came out probably in 96. And already by the time they got into this, they were, you know, it was definitely not the kind of like, it was like a rebellion against Rift almost, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I just think it was more relaxed and the guys could kind of do whatever, you know, you're playing in Europe when they played in clubs, I felt like they just could connect with people and just kind of lose themselves. Whereas, you know, when they would do like underplays in the US, it's not the same. Like the show at the Fillmore in 98, like it's just kind of blah, you know?
I totally agree. And I think I definitely saw it. This is how I saw it. And it sounds like you too, and probably the band, just in a way, Europe prepared, was just sort of preparation or fun and prepared them for the upcoming next tour in America.
Yeah, I mean, it was, they also just, I think the thing about Phish was, at least back in the old days, you know, there's always all these talks about like how the Betty Ford Clinic and all that went too far and all that. But what it did was it set this sort of, like, if the band knew everyone was having fun, when they were in a fun environment, they played better, you know?
Yep.
And I think that was part of it. You know, Europe was fun. We were having a good time. We were doing, like, you know, renting scooters in Rome and basically almost getting killed. And, like, you get to the gig, then I'm like, oh, my God, that was so fun. You know, like, there was a lot of that going on, you know?
Yep. Just being in a different place.
Yeah. And, but I think musically they were definitely changing. I think the Talking Heads record was a big part of that, you know, and 97, 98 kind of with the Ghost record as well, really kind of catered to that kind of vibe, you know?
Well, let's talk more about the music when we return after a quick break.
Hey listeners, I want to tell you about one of our great partners, DistroKid. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads and artists keeping 100% of their royalties and earnings. If you're a musician and looking to get your music out there, DistroKid is the way to go. DistroKid is available for iOS and Android and is now available in Apple's App Store and the Google Play Store. More than a million artists rely on DistroKid to get their music onto Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all other major streaming services. And with DistroKid, you can upload new releases, see your financial progress, get notified when you've earned royalties, withdraw money from the app, view and share links, check your streaming stats, and a whole lot more. DistroKid has more features than any other music distributor. Check them out today. Go to distrokid.com, that's DistroKid with a capital K, .com/VIP/undermine for a special offer only for our listeners. That's DistroKid, capital K, .com/VIP/undermine. Thanks, DistroKid.
Hello out there.
Yes, hello out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!
And we are back. Let's talk about the show itself. So these highlights, well, the highlights are highlighted on the official album Slip, Stitch, and Pass.
Yeah.
So the band at the time said they were releasing it to showcase this new breakthrough they had. And I guess this counts as their second live album, right? And this one was in my car. You know, I don't know if you know about me and my other Osiris brethren, but they listen to a lot of old Phish shows and I don't. But this one, because it was Slip, Stitch, and Pass, it was in my Ford Explorer. And every time I started the key, the CD started from the beginning. So I heard Cities, Wolfmans, and Jesus over and over and over. But a great album. But they didn't do the whole show. It was just, they just did a selection.
I feel like it was almost like an antidote to what a live one was, right? Like a live one was like, you know, versions from all these different shows and like the definitive live album. And like, I don't know anyone who listens to it. It's not that it's bad or good or whatever. It just doesn't have the feel like this show does, you know? And I mean, the other thing that's of note, obviously, is the cover was done by the guy who did the Pink Floyd album covers.
Strom Thurgeson.
Yeah. And I remember like we were in London, I guess it was, you know, one of these other tours later, probably later that summer or whatever. and you know, going to meet with him, and just like he had this whole, he did this, it cost so much money. And Elektra was like, because he actually built that ball. You
know, like, oh my gosh.
I mean, it was just nuts, you know.
When but, Fish, you know, does an album cover like Round Room, they actually build the thing.
Yeah.
For no reason. Someone could draw it.
Yeah, you gotta do it. You can't, you can never go backwards, right? And just even the fact that, like, you know, we got to work with that guy who, you know, Animals and Wish You Were Here, all those great album covers that Pink Floyd had, you know.
Incredible. Was he an old guy at the time? Strom Thurgood?
He was old at the time.
Yeah.
So he, I think he passed away recently.
I'm not sure. But I do like the cover. You know,
it's a dude, great cover.
A dude being chased by a ball of yarn. I'm not quite sure how it fits in with Fish.
Yeah. but I mean, you know, it's funny. That show, I remember it because I think we'd had like a, like we went to the Rape-A-Bomb the night before and just kind of were like, you know, had fun, so to speak. But no one really did anything. That was kind of like, that was, we would walk up and down and be like, oh, we'd probably try and goad like somebody into going in there, you know? And I think eventually we may have goaded someone to go into one of the rooms.
I need initials at least.
Yeah, no initials. I won't say.
All right, famous tracks from Slipstitch Pass, like Wolfman's and then Mike's Groove. But in addition to that, there's a really interesting heavy metal possum.
Yeah.
And they did a lot of covers, actually, three or four covers in that show, The Cities.
Right. If I remember, like they played Cities one other time because when I started working for them in 91, they had never played it. They played it once. And then this was like just, it kind of came out of nowhere. I don't even really remember them like rehearsing it.
Version though.
Yeah. You know, I just felt like
Cities, Wolfman's, and Jesus Left Chicago is Slipstitch and Pass. Cities also did open the show. So they were true in that regard.
Hold on. I feel like is that right?
I think it's right.
Hold on, I'm looking.
Let's see. It now. Set one, Cities, Okie Pa, okay. Down with Disease, Way.
Yeah, it's funny. That's right. Okay. Anyway, we had also, that was our second time playing there. I think we played there in the summer of 96 because we had done, when we played that tour with Santana, we'd done a couple solo shows within there, you know. Anyway, the Wolfman's, I think, was the first extended one. Cities was great. And the Mike song is just one of the, it was, definitely was like, it should be called Mike's album, you know, like it's really like he's kind of running the show and the whole thing, you know, it's one of his great nights. And Mike could have those nights. And usually, like, you know, you kind of expect Trey to be on, but when Mike is on, it's like, that's when Fish is the best, I think.
That's awesome.
In particular, that Mike song is just kind of, you know, fun and kind of all over the place in a good way, you know, and the Doors thing, which is, you know.
This is the end, my only friend, the end. Indians lying on Dawn's highway bleeding. Ghost in the young child's fragile exile mind.
Listening back, I remember when Paige was doing Long Boy and he came walking out and Fish said, he walked on down the hall. And I was just like, you know, like, Fish always had that timing just to just hit it perfect, you know?
Do you have any insight into the you know, why the Doors were at the end of Mike's?
I don't know. I mean, you know, we were in Paris about a week before that. We played that. We played the place where all the Queens, not Queens of Stone.
He got arrested.
No, we played the place that the Bataclan was the place where that the terrorist thing happened. We played there in 97. Funny story about France is there was this guy who was always this drum magazine guy that every time we go to Europe would interview Fishman, and the magazine was called Le Batteur. You know, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he looked kind of like Fishman, and he would always show up and he'd have all these magazines, and, you know, just kind of funny. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like we maybe, like, one of the other things we used to always do in Europe is we'd always go to, like, sort of the tourist places. Or, I mean, I remember you and me, you and Trey tried to get into the casino in, like, France. Remember that time? And, like, you needed like a suit.
I was woefully underdressed. I think Trey was okay. You and I were not.
No, I think he looked at us and said, this is impossible. like, because we said, like, do you have like a jacket that we could just wear?
Yeah. No, absolutely not. No.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was like, you know, like we went to like the beaches of Normandy. It was like in Deauville or something. But
this wasn't where you cut off the heads of the tourists in the photographs.
No, that was summer 98. That was when Todd Phillips was out there. That was Barcelona. Yeah.
Do you have any good memories of stuff that you guys did in the off days?
I mean, I'm trying to remember, like, in this particular tour, it was actually kind of cold, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, I remember Europe. I mean, one of the best days off we ever had was we rented these scooters in Rome, and we all did it, right? And, of course, it kind of was exactly how, like, the whole thing. Trey got the fastest one. It was, like, fucking taken off, you know? And Corona was kind of right behind him and a little bit all over the place. And then it was, like, me and Fishman and Page were just like trying to keep up with those guys, you know? And I remember like Fishman almost got hit by a bus. I mean, if you've ever driven in Rome, it's insane, you know? But we literally covered the whole city, like, and it was just like the best day, you know? And then we went to this like really cool Italian restaurant and, you know, like I got like the fruits de mer pasta and I asked for like some Parmesan and the guy basically was like, you don't put Parmesan cheese on seafood. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was like, oh, sorry. I don't know. Yeah.
Why do you think the band stopped touring Europe?
I mean, I think it just became like after that the one in 98, I think it just became like an obstacle to kind of wrap your head around. Like, they already weren't touring that much anyway. And by later on in the years, like to spend one of those periods going over there, you know, I don't know. I just think they don't really care, you know.
It's probably a lot of money. Like commercially, they probably didn't make any sense, right?
It would definitely not. They would lose money, but
right.
You know, I'm pretty sure.
The idea was to open up a new market. And so they went repeatedly for a while. And then they probably economically saw the numbers weren't working and stopped going.
We also saw it was just like basically in most cities, it was like American kids were coming over or that lived in the city would come to the shows. I mean, you know, in Italy and Germany, you would see some like Zappa people or whatever, you know, some weird record type collector guys. But it wasn't like, you know, it just wasn't work. It just wasn't going to work. But I think if they went over there now, they're such like an institution, they'd probably, you know, they could probably play the O2 in London, I'm guessing, you know, but who knows?
I'd like them to go back. And I know everyone would go, right? Everyone would follow them.
Yeah.
People are spending a lot of money to go to Mexico. And so this wouldn't be that much different.
No. I mean, it is. I think it is logistically, it's just... Like people would always say, oh my God, you're going to Europe. It's so fun. And like, yes, while we would have fun, it just touring in Europe, it kind of sucks.
It's got to be tough.
Unless you're like, you know, the police or something, you know, those Europe tours were a little bit better.
you did a couple of those, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. We would, like, I mean, the police and across, it was funny doing that as a tour manager. I was Stewart's tour manager. The police are big everywhere, you know, not just America. You know, as it relates to Fish, they would like, because most of those guys had heard of Fish but not, you know, not really, and they would always make fun of me because I was like the kid that worked for this, you know, like they would post my resume all over the building, you know,
looking for jobs. Then,
I feel like I told this story maybe on the podcast even, but I tried to, like, they asked me to play a Fish song on the plane and I picked Taste the dumbest. Like, as soon as I put it on, I was like, this is so stupid. Like, you know, like, just like it sounded so like, you know, like, oh, I picked the wrong song.
Intellectual or something.
We're back. You might not have noticed it, but we just had a huge technical screw up. I'm now here alone with a new mic, and we lost Brad, but we were essentially at the end of the interview anyway. So I think I'll just thank Brad so much for coming on. Brad Sands, great friend of Osiris and Undermine. He's really just plug and play, isn't he? He doesn't really need an interviewer. He can just talk for a half hour, and that would be fine. The knowledge he has as a legit insider who was there with the band for the entire 90s is unmatched. And we're so glad he's willing to share it with us now and then. I hope we covered the show enough. As I said, my knowledge of March 1st, 1997 was warped by having the Slip, Stitch, and Pass CD in my car for a long time. So I know a selection of the music from the show very well. But I wasn't in Germany and definitely enjoyed re-listening and hearing Brad's perspective. I'm going to wave to my co-hosts, Benji Eisen and RJB, and they were both suspiciously busy today and had to sit this one out. Also, thanks to the Undermine team at large, even though it's small, Matt, Eric, Nick, and Christina. And thank you to everyone out there in podcast land for joining us. Remember to review and subscribe wherever you listen or watch. We'll see you in a couple of days. If you feel like listening to the early July 97 shows from Amsterdam, please do. And until then, be safe and be careful hitching any rides on the backs of any worms. Auf Wiedersehen.
Osiris.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effie Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Frates from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.